Some hope for the future. Some wait for the call to say that the days are.
Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 450. Yes, there was no actual 449. We had 2 448s. I'm your host.
We're on adventure.
Can't keep track of shit. Mike F's, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
Sleepy in Seattle. They've been pretty fun with us.
All shook up in southwestern Japan. Your man, Japan Michael Baker, Gaijin Monogatari.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer, Joe Hanley. Can't think of clever quip. Currently doing some spicy raids in Splatoon Raiders.
Ugh.
Spicy.
New York's Hockey Pub is spicy.
Extra wasabi. Okay.
Any fans of Stefan? No. All right, never mind.
Who?
The SNL character, Stefan. Okay. He was on Weekend Update when Seth Meyers was doing it, and it was Bill Hader. Yeah.
I'm going to come clean with you.
I was going to say, I've never watched a full episode of during that entire run of Saturday Night Live.
I haven't watched SNL in like 20 years.
Okay. Never mind.
Sorry.
But he would play
a recurring... still doing Night at the Roxbury sketches.
No. Now, basically, he would do this recurring character on Weekend Update where his name was Stefan, so he would say, oh, so what's going on with you? And he'd be like, giving you updates on what's cool in New York City, and it was all fake, of course, but yeah. I just remember the one time he was like, New York's hottest club is spicy! So, that's why I said it the way I said it. Anyways.
Thanks.
Makes sense.
Let's go! Troll.
Yo, I'm getting purple items right now. This is crazy.
3 stars?
Yeah.
Good shit.
3-star purples, yo, on spicy raids. Because last night for shenanigans, we defeated that... Well, Wheels helped me defeat that first major boss, and it was epic. That's what I've been playing mostly.
Oh, we're not doing...
Yeah, we're not actually doing what you've been playing.
You didn't read the show notes, did you?
I may have skimmed them briefly.
There are show notes.
All right, anyways.
I read them, even though I promised not to.
We're forgoing
this whole episode is just complaining about Sony again?
No, not the whole episode.
We can talk about other stuff, I'm sure. We can complain about other stuff.
We're just going to replace the what you've been playing. Because this has been in my brain for a month, and I feel like I just have to get it out of my brain so maybe I can actually focus on enjoying life again.
Okay. Fair
enough. Unfortunately, they have fucked me once again.
Yeah, they will do that because Sony sucks ass. Fuck Sony.
Did you guys
Sony
ever
sucks,
watch
Microsoft sucks for in hell?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Blood Plus, the anime series?
I was never.
I vaguely remember it existed, but I don't think I ever watched most of it.
Well, I watched it when it was on Adult Swim, probably 2007 ish.
That sounds like an 2007 show, yeah.
And I want to say that Sony handled the distribution rights for the DVDs, and of course they went out of print, and it never got a Blu-ray release, and now it's not even on any streaming services. So you have to just... I found it on YouTube. Some guy had all the episodes. Hopefully it doesn't get taken down.
Yeah, no, they technically are in control of a vast majority of North American anime licenses, because they own Crunchyroll.
But it's not even on Crunchyroll. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm saying they don't give a shit.
Right. Yeah, I'm backing you up here. Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be a theme here because Sony doesn't seem to give a shit until it bites them in the ass, which I think it will eventually. But
hopefully.
Not going to play out right now.
No.
Will not play out the way they think it will. No.
No.
Hopefully.
Because how many people have already decided they don't want a PlayStation 6? You know?
Honestly, they probably were going to decide that before the disc drive thing. That just made it worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the price it's a dicey value proposition. Yeah. It's going to be really expensive. Like, what possible games could be sold for it that you can't purchase on something else?
I mean, we're already at the point where it's like the majority of games that are exclusive to Series X and PS5 could run on PS4 just fine.
As I have noted time and again for stores in this country, the majority of the PlayStation 5 section is also the PlayStation 4 section, often with the same games.
Yeah.
And now both of those sections will disappear.
And again, this has held true for the last 6 years at least.
Yeah, they have, like, Japan is given up. It's basically over.
Sony's given up, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sony has given up on Japan.
Yeah, but yeah, obviously, there's been a lot of numbers out there of journalists oddly just saying, well, look at this, I guess they're right. And I'm just over here, like, ripping my hair out and saying, where is the journalism? Where is the journalism?
I guess they're right, but I do think that there is, like, it's people understand where they come from, but it also point to the fact that, like, something that came about Ex Nihilo, they have been trying to make this happen.
Yes, it's very clear, and Microsoft, you know, whatever they may say now, seemingly was doing the same, because they...
I mean, they wanted you to do Game Pass. That was the same idea.
Yeah. But this is what Microsoft wanted to do since the Xbox One.
My question to them would just be, you fuckers, most of your sales are already digital, which means you are already making most of your money in the environment you want to make from, and now you want to murder a bunch of sales for seemingly no fucking reason.
We really need a roasted golden goose and a side order of cash cow steaks.
Well, they seem to be under the impression that magically these sales are just going to convert into digital sales, which I'm not convinced they are.
They're already losing a lot of money to Valve, I would think, after this announcement. Yeah.
What games do they have that Valve can't handle?
Well, if they were producing their own games, this might be a different story, but they don't. But
exactly. I mean, if we're talking about Nintendo on this, Nintendo has enough first-party titles that it could actually be an issue here. Sony, not so much.
Yeah. But to hit the actual, like, to hit this, I think it actually will hurt them. One of the major problems that we were even referencing is that, like, video games are becoming console quality video games especially are becoming a very expensive, very rare. You know, like, way back in the day, during the period that, like, used games were at their, like, height, a console would come out and it would be somewhat expensive, but an attainable level of expense. And it would go down in price, and by that time there would be games that were not wildly expensive, so it didn't matter as much what they cost when they launched. Mm-hmm. Now, a console will come out, and if it will not lower in price, and, like, for the time being, it in fact will raise in price. That eventually stops happening. But, like, the amount... So one of the big problems that PlayStation, Xbox, and to a lesser extent Nintendo are facing as an existential threat that no one wants to talk about is that they are, like, huge with millennials, less so with Zoomers, less so with Gen Alpha. Like, declining levels of, like, this is our growing up gaming experience. And so what you're seeing, like, happens here is that when you close off as many of these low-cost options up to and including just the second-hand market, you're basically, like, locking out as many, like, children as humanly possible. And already, like, in Japan, like, the they have reaped this. The PlayStation, like, to Japanese consumers of a certain age, it's like, oh, that's the old man thing. Like, old people play that. And, like, that's, you know, why, you know, the big console games will be things like Resident Evil and Final Fantasy and, like, these things that were popular when we were young. And, like, for those to hit a new market, they need to be cheaper. And, like, you know, PCs are expensive, but you already have to have one.
And they do a lot of other stuff, too.
Yeah, because you need to have one for other things. So, like, upgrading that to play games makes more sense than buying a console. And so, like, more and more of those become PC games to those consumers. And, like, what's left on consoles is, like, this is for old dudes. Like, that's why all of your, like, fucking first-party games now are about dad in his 40s and 50s whose children hate him. Like...
Sad dad.
You, yeah, like, the sad dad game did not come about Ex Nihilo. It was both following the designers who were getting old and, like, seeing the consequences of spending way too much time working on a game and way too little time talking to your children. And, like, the fact that the player base was getting old. And, like, that's worse until you get to about 45, 50, at which point, like, which is, like, the kind of the tail end of how old you can make the protagonist for all youth immediately leave. And, like... There's no replenishing market. This is part of why I think Sony has moved from reporting, like, their console sales are still strong, but they've moved from, like, a few years ago, they moved from reporting console sales and, like, unit sales to monthly active users. It was a combination of that and, like, the rise of the live service game, which, once again, like, another thing that, like, is sort of wrangling the low end, like, the cheap way to get into games is now to play slot machine of, like, shooter minigame or an RPG minigame in them. Like, because that's the only thing you can get at, like, you know. You could maybe play you could play, like, smaller games, but you can't play you know, like, cheap things that go on the digital digital stores, but, like, those big expensive games, if you're not an adult working with an income, like, can get none of those. Like, how many, like, $70 games are your parents gonna buy for you? Almost not. And, like, that's only going to get worse. Like, the secondhand market was a way to advertise the next game to people who couldn't afford the current game yet. It's a way to get them invested in things that they can't yet afford. And to throw that onto the pyre, like, yes, you will get will juice a certain number of sales out of people who are like, well, I still want to play it, so I will capitulate to your demands. But, like, you are, in doing so, you are deciding that, like, consumers who are not yet actively invested are no longer worth pursuing. There's no on-ramp, there's no, like, the only on-ramp is, you know, the digital sales, which are often not as good or very time-sensitive. Like, you can go look at some place like Deku Deals, which will tell you when something got cheap and how cheap it got. But if you do that, like, there's, you know, run into the thing where it's like, okay, you know, like, this is the thing they're trying to short circuit, but, like, you can go look at something with $70 at launch. I remember when this first happened, people bringing up on social media, Gear Solid Delta, $70 on the PS5, like, shop. purchasable from Amazon for like 25. And like, you know, these were four new copies. Like these things, they want that to go away. They want these to just be things that like occasionally they will mark down for some sale or another. But to always have control, to always have like a say in how much it's going to cost. When you do that, you are essentially telling people who are supposed to be the future of your consumer base to fuck off and get a job, kid.
So essentially they're seeding the market in Nintendo for several generations to come.
Nintendo, phones, Steam. Like, those are, like, you look at what people, like, what children grow up playing, those are what they play. Nintendo, their parents' phones or iPads, and, like, whatever is on the computer. And, like, this is not a, like, there's not a, like, you know, when I was a kid, like, there were people that didn't have PlayStations, but they really wanted them, because, like, that was the cool thing that was, that had the games you wanted to play on it, even if you didn't have one. That's not what those are anymore, and I'm not convinced Sony has, like, fully realized that.
I don't think they're, like, I don't think it's reached the point where they're not, like, making enough money where it's gonna come through to someone, but it's...
Yeah, like, if someone, like, you look at these trend lines, these are bad trend lines.
Yeah.
This is not the way, like, it, you know, we're not in panic mode, but when you need to start thinking about how to right the ship, because you want to right the ship before you have hit the iceberg.
I think the quote I saw, and I don't really remember where the article was at this point now, that really brought this home for me was, it was an article about pre-orders for GTA 6, about how a lot of them were like the digital deluxe or whatever. And someone
because they are trying to juice the most money from the same consumers rather than trying to get a broader base.
But the quote was like, we're not seeing like an increase in the number of users, we're seeing an increase in the amount of game that the existing users buy. And I'm just looking at this and like, you are taking the wrong fucking message from this. wrong message from this. Holy fuck.
Yeah, like one of the key things that like has been an issue is that like or will continue to be an issue. And one of the things you see a lot with things is like, and this is one of those things that used to piss me off, but like I understand why you do it now, is you would see something where like they were like, oh, just did kind of the same numbers before. And so they start like tinkering with it, trying to get it to go up again. Because while infinite growth will never be possible, if something stops increasing, that means it's going to start decreasing, and that's when you need to start worrying about like what it's going to do when it starts decreasing. Because like the holding pattern cannot stay forever. Like if you're not gaining new consumers, what happens when the old ones start going away? And like that's the thing that I really don't feel like it's like they have an answer for. Like it's like, this problem has been, and I know we've brought this up in prior podcasts, that like, you know, we've hit kind of a ceiling on what a AAA game can sell. Like a popular AAA game can sell unless it's like Grand Theft Auto and like turns into like this stratospheric thing, a merely really successful AAA game sells about 30 million units. That's the number. And in the past, we've broached this subject from a budgetary sense. Like, it doesn't make sense to keep spending more when that number doesn't go up. Like, there is a point where you need to spend less on them, because that's the way you increase profits. And what they've been shooting for is, well, what if each unit was more profitable? Like, that's the call that they've... we juice the hardcore players. Like, get them to buy the $100 GTA 6. Get them to buy it only through us, where we get more money off of it. like, you know, make sure that it's that everything, it's the rent seeking thing you hear about a lot, you know, like, make sure that everything has to come through a transaction with us. We should skim a little off the top of everything. That is the way that they have chosen to address this issue instead of dialing back and spending less.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, like, what you're going to find is that you can continue to, I would say you can probably juice us as a generation of consumers for 10 more years. It means maybe one more PlayStation if you can find an excuse to sell, like, us PlayStations. At that point, I, like, let's flash forward into the future. It's 2036. I'm 45. Fields is probably, like, mid-50s? Like, we are in the hellscape of, like, staring down the barrel of someone on this podcast turning 60.
mm-hmm.
And we are looking at a situation where, like, Zoomers are now the money-making market. Some of them have fond memories of playing PlayStation. A lot of them have fond memories of playing Minecraft on a
Yep.
They don't care about PlayStation in and of itself. They don't care about Xbox in and of itself. They might care somewhat about Nintendo in and of itself. Depends. Like, Gen Alpha, like, a lot of them will have grown up playing a Switch or maybe a hand-me-down Wii. Those things, like, there will be some kind of audience for Nintendo properties, especially because they will continue to push them into movies. Like, that's one of the big reasons that they're all about, like, turning them into movies now, is that is now one of their onboarding strategies for the low-income base. Well, you
can't, I mean,
like, maybe you'll have trouble
playing really well with Pokemon.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Like, the thought process is you may not have grown up, you grew up loving it, and you have money, seek it out. Part of why, like, Sony is trying to aggressively turn, like, franchises they still have into shows, I don't think they've run into the issue, though, that all of those franchises are also only aimed at, like, this God of War TV show that seems to be absolutely snake-bitten. That for 40-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, there, no child will ever watch this. If they do, it's not going to mean anything to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you heard the horror stories about what's going on show's production first?
No.
So they've teamed up with Amazon to do a Prime show for God of War based off the 2018 game. Fuck context. Fuck any reason for why that game is what it is. Fuck it all. And then, like, the fucking, like, guy playing Kratos got, like, a bicep tear halfway through filming. Instead of waiting, they're just like, fuck it. Recasting him.
Oh, I thought it was John Baptiste or
something like that.
I thought it was the guy who played Drax. No,
no, that's yeah. That's the potential.
No, that's Batista. They're thinking of replacing him with Batista.
Okay, well, that would work.
But, yeah,
then, but the right, like, thing to allegedly do would be to say, "Hey, let's wait for you to recover." Right?
Yeah.
No, they fucking fired his ass. He's fucking gone.
Jeez.
And then I saw some people saying that allegedly they're considering recasting the child too.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to undermine you here, but the Fallout TV series was pretty good, and the Last of Us TV series.
I'm not disagreeing with you, yeah. But those are for 40-year-olds.
Right.
Like again, I'm not like, I'm saying we're 50 going on 60.
Right.
They need to have a plan, and they don't seem to have one. Like,
Right, you know, I'm in the process of saving up for new computer parts because it's like, oh, okay, PlayStation 6 is 2 years out and might be, what, $1,200, no disk drive? Fuck that, I'll upgrade my computer.
But why? You know? Yeah, I would have to ask, but why, Joe? What games do you think are going to come out in the next few years that need any sort of upgrade?
Well, I'm also just in terms of like content creation and in terms of like music production and other things that I do. Yeah. Like my motherboard might have a broken USB-C slot. That's, it already has a broken M.2 slot, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, I think the important thing to take out of all of this is like, I feel like we're being fed a lie. Like, yes, physical games are dying as a mainstream concern. Because we've already seen this happen with movies and music, where it becomes less about this is how everyone gets this thing, and this is how a certain segment of the market does. And those people are generally buy a lot of it. And like I think this is kind of why we got vinyl back, because that was the format that people buying music wanted. Like, it wasn't about like the mainstream or anything. It was just, this is what the people who buy music want. There is absolutely a very sizable, very, very sizable market. I mean, and I'm just talking here about like PS5 and Xbox, because it's very clear there's the physical market for Nintendo's ecosystem is fine right now.
Yeah, they've been more even keel on what sells what where.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their own games, if you take out like, because when they show their comparison of digital versus physical, they include like add-ons and stuff. So it's probably about 50-50. But anyway, there is still a sizable market for the other systems for physical games. That's why limited run games exists. That's why Fangamer puts out physical games. There's I can list these companies out like a mile long. Like, there is a market for this, and it's not like Sony is losing any money on this. Even if, you know, the next system, even if they keep making games for the PS5, they would keep doing it even if the next system didn't have a disc drive, because there is a market for it and they don't give a shit.
Right.
That pisses me off at levels I haven't felt in a long time.
Well, and I was going to say, just to reinforce the point from before, like, yeah, I have a small collection of vinyl records, and let me tell you something, now that the demand is up, the prices are astronomical, you know, and they're really milking the people who really want this physical media, and a lot of stores don't, like, you go to Target, there's no CDs, there's vinyl.
There's plenty of CDs online now, though. I think those are coming back because the vinyl prices are high.
Well, that's what I mean. And so the thing is, the Taylor Swift knows that people will pay $100 for the special color variant of her new album. You know what I mean? Like, so you can get the basic black vinyl for $20-$30, depending on how popular the band is. But then you want any kind of limited edition, like color variant with a poster or whatever, then you could be looking at $50-$60. And I would say I've spent a lot of money on some of these records that I collected.
I mean, that's...
And also they're milking us on the 4K Blu-rays in some cases as well. I mean, you know?
Yeah. But the overall point I'm getting to is like the narrative that about a digital only future being inevitable is fucking stupid and infuriating. And people who say that need to shut the fuck up.
And well, then it's
because
a
it's not true. It's not fucking true.
Yeah.
If there is a market for it, people will buy it, and there is a market for it here. The only problem, and why people need to raise their voices more, is because unlike CDs and DVDs and Blu-rays, where it's not like a platform controlled by a few different companies, this ecosystem is a lot more fragile. And obviously we're seeing that now, where Sony's just saying, fuck all you. And I know pretty much all these companies are also, you know, putting out Switch games and putting out maybe even some Xbox games, who they haven't said they're going to shut down their physical production at the moment, anyway.
Which is going to hurt
a lot of companies, for sure.
But one thing that I have seen noted is that a lot of the machinery that Sony needed to produce actual games physically can be repurposed to be producing other things which they feel are more lucrative at the moment.
Yeah, Fireminer actually mentioned that. He's got a bunch of comments in chat. Mentioned that, like, asked if we talked about some of that machinery being used to make AI stuff now.
I wasn't sure if it was directly connected to AI, but I know that they do a lot of optics hardware, always have, and that's how they got into PlayStation in the first place. And just what have they decided is worth making instead of PlayStation? And is it going to be worth the shift? Is the next question. Why not?
Same short-sighted.
It is short-sighted because every decision that these companies make is short-sighted. Yeah, or quarterly.
They're greedy and selfish. Are
quarterly.
Yeah. Like, we have to lay all these people off. Oh, look, we made $2 billion in profit last quarter. It's like, well, then you should give them all their jobs back, right? You know?
No, we will hire
because
cheaper.
That's the reason we made all the profit this quarter is because we weren't paying these people now.
Right.
Yeah, we will hire cheaper people. We just got a challenge and ground into dust.
Let me see our show notes here and see if there's any other points we need to discuss. The frightening comments from the director of Final Fantasy VII Revelation mentioned he's pushing for a physical disc for Final Fantasy VII Revelation, which I assumed was a foregone conclusion, but maybe isn't.
It's definitely coming out early enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume there will be a Game Key card, which, if that's all I get, I guess.
I'm not surprised given the circumstances.
Yeah. But that seems like insane.
That game's going to be like 150 gigs. Yeah. So. Yeah. Like. Yeah. They made comments when asked about a physical version where he basically seems to have said that, like, you know, decisions haven't been made yet. He's looking for one. But, yeah. Fingers crossed?
Yeah. Let me see what other comments I put in my notes. Can the niche continue on a Nintendo ? Xbox? Only world to what's that?
Microsoft, I think, will probably not pull disc production on the Series X, but the Series X is a successful one.
I mean, probably, but
yeah, we don't technically know that. Yes. Leave the question.
And to which I would say probably, but I'm guessing some of these small publishers are probably gonna.
Like, that ecosystem will control.
Yes.
Some of them may, I suspect, pivot into making physical PC games.
It's possible. We've seen that in the past, which I don't know how well that's actually done, but I think...
I don't think it's been huge, but if console market, these people move away from that, the newly minted PC players may find that they have interest.
Yes.
That is a place where you don't have to go through some sort of some sort of console manufacturer. I would suspect we might see some of those, like IM8-Bit or Limited Run, or investing into
some of the older classic Japanese studios that started out with PC Engine in the first place. You're like, oh, let's just go back home.
Yeah, some of them might do that.
I can completely see Falcom just going, yeah, let's just do PC.
Yeah.
I'll do PC and Switch. But in general, like, you might see those boutique publishers, like, move over to PC where, like, no one can tell them, no, you can't.
Yeah, and they could always, since those are smaller print runs in general, they could always say, well, not everyone, most... probably a large majority of PC owners don't have a disk drive. We could put them out on little USB drives.
USB key. I would suspect USB keys will be very common.
Yeah, because, I mean, older, not super fast USB keys are not that expensive. And those would have lots of storage that would fit many modern PC games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, especially the, like, boutique games. It's like, here's some indie Metroidvania. It doesn't need to... Like, you have two options. You can just, like, let it run off of the USB key if you've gone to some trouble, or you can just say, like, yeah, it installs off the USB onto your SSD, and, like, I think in general people would be fine with that solution. I mean, that's what they do with consoles now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised
they haven't tried that as a physical media form for these systems, but whatever.
Yep. Well, the time to do that
has passed. Yeah.
I would think they just, like Sony or Microsoft, even Nintendo, I would think they just wouldn't want you to put the USB drive into your PC and extract the files and pirate it or distribute it or whatever.
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons.
And you didn't want to accidentally format the drive either.
More likely, what I would see, I would expect them to do is to essentially make a USB thing that doesn't fit into a traditional USB slot.
Right.
But.
Well, it's kind of like how the Wii U did not actually have Blu-ray discs. They were a slightly different variant.
They just didn't use the same, but they were the same kind of disc.
But, I mean, that, I think that kind of brings up the other point of, you know, physical sales on Xbox and PlayStation platforms declined, I would say, astronomically more than on Nintendo platforms. And I think that says a lot about the actual physical format. And yes, I know people are going to bring it, but Wheels, Game, key cards, shut the fuck up. We're not talking about those. Okay, please. We're talking about games on an actual cart is a much better form of physical media than a fucking Blu-ray disc, which was an awful form for games the moment they launched the PS3.
Yeah.
They have always sucked.
The disc drive was never enough to keep up with them. It's why installs entered the installs entered the equation. What I'll say about this, like, ultimately, again, like, I think that a significant amount of this also comes down to just that games are, like, a lot of people with Switches got them for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, like, physical games are very useful in that proposition for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which is grandma ain't buying you a fucking eShop game.
Yes, and like, grandma also ain't buying you a bigger SD card when you can't download the game.
Yeah, like, grandma doesn't know what the difference is between an SD card and an SD Express card is. Grandma just sees a card on there and is like, what's this? But yeah, like, one of the things that, like, ultimately, if they want to, like, barrel forward with this idea, one of the things that they need to figure out that they somehow haven't for decades because they just don't care that much is, like, giving someone something. I remember, like, a friend wanted to get me, like, a game for Christmas, like, a few, like, 4 or 5 years ago, and, like, it was a PS5 game, and they were like, well, there's no way to send this to you through it's like system UI or even the website. The only thing I can do is send you a, like, gift, a dollar amount, and tell you what it's for.
Yeah, my brother's had to do that for me a few times.
And it's just like, well, that's bad, like, can't figure out, like, some way that even someone else the console can gift things. Like, just isn't, like, that's one of those things that, like, whenever, like, a birthday or Christmas rolls around, like, my friends will send me a couple Steam games, and it's like, that way to get revenue. I don't know why none of you do this. The only console that has ever let you gift games is the original Wii for some reason.
It's bizarre.
Like, you could gift things from the Wii Shop channel. That was the only console that has ever allowed it. It was in beta for 360 and never launched.
I think you gift stuff on Xbox Series X now, no?
If you can, I've never heard of anyone doing it.
Well, yeah, I've never actually done it, right.
Yeah,
nobody has a Series X.
I don't think you can.
Oh, I'm going to have to load up the Xbox store on the web.
I'm going to load up the Google.
Yeah. Don't use Google. Google bad.
I'm going to load up a search engine.
Yes, thank you. Okay. FireWire brings up a good point, which I want to discuss right now because it's relevant to something we just talked about. And he says, does anyone remember a company called IndieBox that published games on USB? I do remember this. You subscribe to their service and get games like Guacamelee and Hollow Knight and USB. The company eventually stopped doing it because there's not enough demand for games on USB. Has the economic changed since then? I mean, I think problem number one is that was a service and not selling the games individually.
I remember when every goddamn thing had to be like a subscription box.
Yeah.
Like, why would I need this every month?
I think that was problem number one. And problem number two is I think most of the people that buy physical games is still console focused. I think what we're discussing
We're thinking of this making sense in like 5 years when like...
Yeah.
A lot of those people have moved on because the new consoles are super expensive.
Suck shit.
Like, the new consoles are super expensive and not meeting their need. You should be preparing to figure out the logistics of this now.
Yeah.
Because it will be useful to have that information in 5 years.
Yeah, like, we're talking about where this is going to go in the future because, as we have discussed, there is a market for physical games, and right now it looks like that's going to be primarily on Switch/Switch 2 going forward.
Mm-hmm. The boutique publishers have realized that their hardcore market likes this kind of thing, which is why so many of them have decided to just sell you a Switch 2 card and charge you more for it, and that seems to be working out for
them. Yeah, no, it's working out fine. I mean, I think it's even working out fine for Nintendo. They're going to charge $80 for Fire Emblem if you don't pre-order ahead of time. I don't think that's going to affect their physical sales one bit.
I'm pretty that sure, game is going
pretty
to
sure
sell
that special edition there. Is sold out multiple places.
For sold repeatedly. Out.
Like so, and like fucking.
There's a Fire Emblem Direct in the morning, by the way.
Yeah, I need to watch.
To that. Date and, this one,
and like the fucking Oblivion remaster for Switch 2 is sold out like everywhere.
Is that real? That's the only version that will be on the. It's on.
I cannot, if I see another person telling me to prepare for the inevitable future, digital-only future on fucking Blue Sky.
Every time someone says that to Wheels, he purchases a new ill-advised Evercade collection. Yes.
Or I just buy some random fucking indie game, which...
You guys
going
get
to work
interactions
out very
on Blue
well
Sky?
For me in buying.
I do, but mostly when I'm reacting.
Sorry.
Buying random fucking pre-ordering random fucking indie games on cart for Switch 2 is going to pay off in dividends for me in the future. I just know it.
One day these will be the only valid cart.
I have been playing Dread Delusion while I've been recording this, and this game is
that game's super fucking
and
cool,
fucking awesome. And I would not have bought
it. It is Kingsfield meets...
I probably would have ignored it if they hadn't announced the special edition. And in fact, now I'm going to go and try and order the special Lost and Cult edition of this game.
Bite me fucking yelling at you to play it.
Yes, I know. Yell at me to play more weird itty things, because I think I'm kind of done with most AAA games, to be honest.
Because I have been a spectator, so at this point...
Like, I can't even gauge any interest in GTA. So the only interest I have in GTA 6 is maybe playing at the same time as my teenage son, so we can enjoy it together.
You do owe that to him.
I should probably do that. Otherwise, I don't give a shit. But hey, at least we're not. I'm not going to be buying it for PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation.
And no, I will not be buying it from the digital store. I'm going to buy that stupid fucking code in a box. Just to make a point.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. We're going all over the place now.
Yes.
Wheels is having a crash out.
This is therapeutic, though, because I've had a bad
month. No, I respect it.
My brain has been in a bad place this bad month. You've heard me talking about buying Evercades. I sold, I want to say, 85% of the PS5 and PS4 games I owned and tracked down copies of many of them on Xbox. Not because Microsoft doesn't suck shit, but because I have multiple Xbox Ones in the house, and I've always liked that console more than the PS4 or PS5.
Yeah. I'm expecting an Evercade Nexus in the mail for Christmas.
If you want an Evercade, that can be arranged.
Jesus.
Okay. Maybe not the Nexus.
Wait, can I have an Evercade?
Evercade's for
everybody all. Gets a Nexus.
You get an Evercade.
They might be all the super pockets for everyone, because those are only like $60.
I mean, that's not bad. I mean, that's the only thing the children will be able to afford.
I want the one that you plug into the TV, though.
Maybe.
I'll negotiate later.
I mean, that one is cool because you can put two carts in it at once.
Yes, exactly.
God, it's like an Atari 800.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Or a GameCom.
Just to go over some of the weird things that happened this month, I traded in a bunch of PS5 games at a local retro store and was looking around. It's like, well, there's not much I want here, and there's a big gap between credit and cash.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take an Xbox One so I can put it on my desk and have it plugged in there for streaming.
Assume it was a 1S?
It is a 1X because it was only $30 more. And I was like, okay, fuck it.
Yeah, I didn't think you could find those anymore. I kind of wish I'd...
They're all over the place.
Oh, there. Okay.
And, I mean, there's a ton of games for it. And but I'm going to assume they're cheaper than PS4, so that is a decent investment. If you're
the other thing is that if you just want to play like an Xbox 360 game, if it runs on that, that's the best place to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, guys, I did the stupidest thing imaginable because...
Oh, no.
When I could not secure a pre-order on the PS5, I pre-ordered the Series S.
Eric, all this happening.
And then I thought, oh, I guess I don't need this 1X anymore, and sold that. Even though it was my 4K Blu-ray player. I sold it to my brother, though, and he got a lot of use out of it. But then the second I got an email from GameStop, like, oh, hey, how'd you like to get a Series X? It was like, okay. So then I sold the Series S and put it towards the Series X. Yeah, so about 6 months after getting the Series S, I was like, wait a minute, this isn't working. I need a disc-based console. I want to watch 4K Blu-ray. And I still can't get a fucking PS5.
I'm morally disallowed from selling my Series S because the last gift my family gave me before both my parents died.
Oof. Yeah, that's awful. I would hang on to that.
Yeah.
Well, the Series S, though, you know what? When it was $300, it was...
Made sense. It made sense at that price.
It was
now
a pretty
it
good
just
value
went up $200 more dollars in Europe for the price.
And that's it. If you were going to have Game Pass anyways, then Series S was a great option. But then Game
it
Pass...
It made perfect sense in the Game Pass years.
But then when Game Pass got more expensive, it was like, no. And now, yeah, I think I was just reading that Series S is now more expensive than Switch 2. It's like, well then, like, what is Microsoft doing? Like, no one's buying your console and you raise the price? Like, come on.
I don't think they have a choice, to
no,
be honest.
No, that's true. That's true.
Tia Nadella has been listening to podcasts summarized by AI and his brain is...
His brain is cooked.
But, I mean, I think the other point I would say is... Instead of buying a Series S, you can buy an Xbox One and play the majority of games that complain yeah. I
am hopeful that if someone ever asks an AI to summarize this podcast, that it will summarize the point where I said that if you had an AI summarize this podcast for you, you're a stupid fucking asshole and I don't respect you and don't want you listening.
This is not for you.
Okay, Fireminer has another point relevant to this discussion.
Yes.
You really have to bring up how much do collectors, especially Sega collectors, hate the chokehold Luminaron Games currently has over the physical market. Do they? The problem is
a lot of collectors have opinions.
Okay. The problem is they get all the games that people are willing to overpay for a physical copy. How can a startup create the connections needed in the game industry to be able to get games the most desirable gamers eventually overtake Luminaron Games? Okay, I could kind of get your point here because I know Luminaron Games at this point, kind of being early in this market, has lots of connections in the game industry and they get lots of physical versions of.
And used to have a lot of connections within the Embracer Group.
Yes.
It's hard. I'm not going to pretend that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend it's easy. I do think that it's like possible just by dint of the fact that like. Limited run games, beginning and end of their stranglehold is that a company they have relationships with companies that are desirable, which is not nothing, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's also not irreplaceable. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not impossible for.
Okay. That's
now.
Limited Games also has a new CEO now, and they seem to be headed in a better direction. Than some of the issues in the past.
We get fewer reprints of goddamn Night Trap.
I think we will.
You will play Night Trap and you will like it.
Yeah.
I've played Night Trap and I've gotten the enjoyment that you'll get out of
it. I never played it. Is it worth playing?
You'll get caught. No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Psychopaths. Like it was made for the fucking Pro Nemo. It was not made for that. It was eventually released on that. It was originally designed for the Control Vision, a Hasbro VHS based system, which explains a great deal about how it functions.
You know, one of my favorite episodes of Community is when they're playing the VHS.
Yes, the game. Yeah. Yes, the VHS. But yeah, like the original idea behind like Night Trap was that it was to be a launch game for the Control Vision, which was a VHS-based system that never actually came out, where the idea was that you would, like, there's only so much you can do. The VHS is perfectly linear, and seek times are how fast is the motor. So The gameplay of Night Trap makes a lot more sense. Strictly linear, time-based. How well did you catch, like... The Control Vision would have let you switch between essentially tracks on a VHS tape, so switch between security cameras. That's the only metaphor that works. The medium is the message.
What else is Fireminer saying here? What you just said about the second games are there to advertise the games to kids and other people without a lot of money. Does it apply to Pokemon, Digimon, and other kid-friendly franchises? Because consoles and games are so expensive while adults play these games too. The situation of the entire family sharing a single Switch 2 in his Game Boy library. Like Gaijin's kid plays his copy of Pokemon Scarlet, right? Is that true, Gaijin?
Well, I don't have a copy of Pokemon Scarlet, and my girls are actually into video games. So...
And I can't get my kids to play Pokemon for the life of me.
I mean, Pokemon. My girls are interested in Pokemon, and they like looking at my Pokemon cards, and my 7-year-old is currently practicing katakana by copying names of Pokemon off of cards.
Nice. Cool.
But, I mean, the point of me having cards is that I use them in place of certain types of flash cards for English lessons.
My eldest.
I mean, teaching comparisons grammar is a lot easier when you have a lot more to draw from on comparing things.
My eldest was briefly into the cards, but I cannot get him to play anything resembling an RPG to save my life.
We'll get there eventually.
Except Hades. Yeah, he played Hades for a bit.
Yeah, because that's an action game with RPG in it.
I was going to say that my older niece seems less interested in Pokemon, but my younger niece saw my shoulder Pokapia, and she just picked it up right away because she plays Animal Crossing a little bit. Mm-hmm. But she had no, like, she's 7 years old, and it's like there's other games like Donkey Kong Bonanza for some reason she was struggling with a little bit.
It's hard.
3D right. platformers.
Learning to control learning right. to control games in 3D space is hard. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, try and right. hand a game like that to like an adult who has never played like a 3D platformer, and they will. It would be painful to watch.
So where I was going with this was just that I let her play Pokapia, and she just no issues at all. Mm-hmm. Just immediately understood. Oh, I'm like, hey, you should go help Squirtle. You know, oh, okay, and she does, and oh, I can water the grass now. Great, and then oh, hey, why don't you help Bulbasaur? Oh, sure. Oh, now I can plant grass. Great.
So the key part of being slow paced is like there's no pressure to immediately understand how the controls work. Why something like Animal Crossing, it's not intimidating to get into, and Pokopia inherits the DNA.
Right. So what I would say is, if you want your kids to get into Pokemon, maybe try Pokapia.
I mean, honestly, Nintendo does enough
stuff in the anime.
You don't really have to force. You don't really have to force the issue. If they're going to get into it, it will probably happen naturally.
They're gonna like Mario because they saw the Mario movie, and then they'll play the games, one of the 2D ones, and races.
Yep. Then. Nintendo came up with a very nice Peach game, Princess Peach game, just because of the movie.
You know, my kids really like Goat Simulator. I wonder if I can get them to wander around in Breath of the Wild.
I have to hand them SpongeBob SquarePants to Patrick's.
I actually just grabbed a copy of that from Walmart for $10 today.
You and I both know someone who worked on that.
Oops, there's another one.
On it?
It's someone from a community.
Did they also work on that DC game? Or is that someone else?
No, I said yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is also a very good game.
Yeah. That game is just also good.
Maybe we should start hacking away at the...
Yeah, there's a bunch of questions, I'm sure.
I'm going to grab some of the more recent ones, and then I'll scroll back to some of the other ones.
Fireminer, if you have something you particularly want burning, just...
Yeah, you can just throw it back in chat.
Might as well mention the highlight of my previous week first, since I just got a reminder of it about 15 seconds ago again.
Earthquake?
Yay!
Yeah, we just got another tremor through.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
We're getting like 5 a day, at least, I noticed. So, not long after we signed off from the last week's Q&A quest, actually. So, yeah. But
there's still a Japan when I come to visit in a few months.
Well, I mean, you're going to be visiting the opposite side of the country.
Yes, I'm making a joke.
Yes. Hopefully the temperatures will be down from 104 in the shade by the time you get here. So.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be mid-September, so...
Yeah, yep. Noting that there's a reason why on all these calendar-based or calendar game-based games or school-based games, September is when the typhoon arrives.
Nothing like typhoon season.
Yeah. Oh no, we're already on like typhoon 13 of this year's season. So.
What?
Is that normal?
No, actually, and quite a few of them have been like minor storms, and there's one. Instance where two of them formed simultaneously in mirror image on either side of the equator. This is why they're predicting a really bad El Nino effect this year.
Yeah, super El Nino. I was reading about that.
Yep.
Real wrath of God shit.
Yeah. Okay, so I have no idea if you heard me just randomly going, oh crap, a couple minutes ago now. It was because the windows were shaking again. Yeah, so, yes, it's been a fun week. Oof. And speaking of computer stuff, one of my computer chargers broke yesterday, so I got to go out in, like, 104-degree weather to locate one of the used games, one of the used computer stores actually could have stocked the replacement charger.
How common is air conditioning in Japan? I assume quite common.
Quite common, yes, and very welcome.
I mean, you don't want to see what's happening in Europe.
I mean, more than half the country falls into the subtropical zone. And one of the reasons why kudzu became such a problem in the American South is because the climate matches pretty well.
So they knew the importance of air conditioning early.
Oh yeah. Nice efficient little ones. Yep. Granted, I'm reminded of last year's vacation period where we took a trip to Vancouver, and the absolute high temperature for Vancouver was still not quite as hot as the inside of our apartment that summer.
Yeah, we've had a very mild summer. The highest temperature we've gotten is 90.
Yeah.
It's been
that was for one day.
Most of July here.
Yeah.
And rainy.
But we officially bounced 40 Celsius yesterday. Which is, I think, about 104.
Yep. Getting up there.
Well, yep. Folks, I just bought the Pokemon Pokopia expansion pass. I'm going to check that out.
I need to get Pokopia.
Yeah.
I'm holding out to see if they do a re-release on an actual cart.
The full cart.
Yeah.
Like, I would say that's silly, but they did that. They've done with Pokemon games where it's just like, oh yeah, here's the... We have bundled the DLC onto a cart.
Yep. I mean, when and if I actually get Scarlet or Violet, it's going to be one of those bundled carts. So
the DLCs are really cool.
Mm-hmm. Scarlet and Violet's really good, even if you're just playing on Switch 1.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd probably find it hard to go back to at this point, but we played it.
I could do it without issue. I could do it without issue, but like if you're frame rate sensitive, the two versions.
Well, it's just playing it on Switch 1 made me really appreciate what they did on Switch 2 with it. That's all.
Yeah. That game rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to Wind and Waves.
Yes. What's Farmer saying here? Naoki Hamaguchi recently said...
Naoki
Hamaguchi. I will get that right eventually. He recently said in an interview they thought it was important for games to incorporate gameplay elements that made people want to play them instead of being satisfied just from watching a stream or YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
Besides visual novel and adventure games, which genre is at most danger of having this problem? Turn-based strategy games? I don't think so. Dungeon crawlers?
No, there's too much individual. Yeah, all of those have too much individual decision-making.
Yeah.
Actually, it's going to depend on your temperament. For me, it's a lot of, like, linear AAA.
Yeah.
If, like, you know, because they often... Those games often have very kind of linear, like, in a different sense, linear, like, combat. Like, the core gameplay will be simple puzzles and very static combat. Like, we have left behind the day, like, you know, your Call of Duties, that kind of thing. We have left behind the days of, like, a shooter being a big arena where things kind of dynamically happen. And so, you know, for someone like me, if I was going to engage with those, I'd probably just, like, if one of them grabbed me, I'd probably be just as happy watching them.
Yeah, which is hilarious, like, because they seem to pay those streamers to play those games that come out.
Oh, they absolutely do, because most of those are, like, the dynamic part is the multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they do it for some games that are, like, this is a single-player game, and, like, you're just paying people to just play it, and some people are probably just going to experience it that way. Like,
Yeah. One of the things that I think has pushed us towards open world development is that, like, open worlds breed the sense that things might happen dynamically. Mm. They give you reasons to experience things in weird orders, which makes them less one and done stream.
I think it's the same reason why roguelike games finally took off as well. Just that for a very similar reason.
That, like, all sorts of things could happen.
Oh,
that's worth a lot when you're trying to sell a game.
Bubbly Basin comes out on the 5th. Oh, okay.
That is. Just assume I'm doing that in the, like, the fucking Marge's mom voice. Don't know what the...
I thought I could play it now. That's why I just bought the expansion pass, and I'm a day early. Oh, well.
Too well. Cool.
Okay, well...
Want it now?
So before we started here, Eric, friend of the channel, posted a link.
Oh, yeah, our dear friend.
Wheelieverse channel, and it's like... Not confirmed, but apparently a Chinese studio is working to making a remaster of Metal Saga Season of Steel, which was a DS game from the Metal Mech series. It was, if you ever played Metal Saga for PlayStation 2, that was Chains of the Sandstorm, was, I think, the Japanese title. And so this is the other game that was made at that time.
I remember you saying that if they had put those two together, they would have had a really great Metal Mech.
That is actually how I ended my review of Metal Saga PS2, because I mean, we already had a review of it in English, so when I was doing a review of it, I was playing in Japanese, I was just like, we already have this nice review, you go read that now, come back here, we're going to be talking about how this game fits in with the rest of its series, and why it's done things that have never been repeated in the series. And I ended it with an outro that was like, yeah, if you took all the things that this game did right and you took all the things that Season of Steel did right, you'd have a pretty good game, and that would be Metal Max 3. And so I'm just looking at what is vaguely known here, and the first thing that stands out is, we'll also support button inputs.
Seems important.
Which I can tell you would have raised my score for this game by half a point. Immediately.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. So,
it would be really funny if the PS5 version didn't incorporate button input and you just had to play everything on the goddamn touchpad.
I think that it would get review bombed to hell and would deserve it.
It would, but it would also be one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
Yes. Because, I mean, yeah. In comparison between the two, it is definitely the better Metal Saga game. It is... There are several Metal Max games that are better than it is, but notably, they all took design elements from it. So if you play the PlayStation 2 game, what you're seeing is a lot of stuff that was originally from the Famicom and Super Famicom games that has been... expanded upon and attempted to be developed for a more modern version, circa 2004. And it didn't work very well. And so then they brought back the original design team from that worked for Data East at the time. Because they bought the entire IP from Data East and tried to do their own thing with it first. And this was the original team's attempt to update the series, and it works a lot better. I would say it is definitely a better game than Xeno. I mean, it does not take much, but it's definitely a better game than
Xeno. Yeah, I was going to say, low bar.
Yep. This was the first Metal game to really lean into each character has a different job class. Far more so than several of the other games that came after it. And so it was the first one to have some... It had much more in-depth tank customization. It was the first one to allow for multiple weapons equipped on each character, so you could have someone with a rifle, a taser, and a flamethrower at the same time, and just switch between them.
Mad Max.
Yeah. So, the downsides being that it had a much smaller party limit, like two characters and a tank only. So, yeah.
Well,
there were things that needed to be improved upon. It was still a very good game, and if this happens to actually be true, and this game is coming out for PC, PlayStation, and Switch 2, I would strongly recommend it. Hopefully that they will actually give it a decent translation worth the time, but it's still pretty good. Yeah. This is also probably the most linear story to be found in the entire series. So, for what it's worth. It definitely flows more like a standard JRPG in a lot of ways than the let's just go see stuff and find out what happens approach that a lot of the games in the series have.
So, at least it ain't Xeno.
Yes, definitely not Xeno.
Please be a better remaster / remake than Xeno Reborn.
It won't take much. But yeah.
As I recall, Xeno Reborn was actively worse.
Xeno Reborn lost story content. They removed plot content from that game.
I don't barely believe that. It's been 10 years.
There are specific scenes that I remember very clearly from the Vita version I still have that did not appear in the Switch version, which I no longer have because I sold that sucker back.
Oh, I recall Xeno Reborn 2, and it's absolutely coming out and not being hilariously canceled.
Yep. Wild West. Sadly. Metal Dogs actually had a connection into Wild West, and we shall never find out what it was going to be. Season of Steel also had some of the more interesting wanted monsters to appear in the series. So there were some very interesting scenarios to work through, including the fact that the only way to get into the final level of the game was to physically disable the final level in the game so it would crash land and you could get into it.
I mean, that's cute. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yep. You can see the final level of the game floating above the map throughout the entire game. And if you get too close to it, it will attack you and you will have to run away.
What's the issue with?
It's my son just came upstairs and asked what game I was playing. Have you never used Twitch before? It says the game right on the window. Also, apparently, my
to be fair, Wheels. Audio. I was going to say, your stream also routinely just has the wrong game list.
That's true.
Yeah.
My friend makes a good point that I routinely don't update the game I'm streaming, so that's fair. It's called Dread Delusion, PJ. Look it up.
It's cool.
Also, inform your son that this would have been the perfect time to invert the meme and go, "Are you winning, Dad?"
PJ, come here.
Are you winning, Dad?
Have you ever seen a meme of like an old person walking into someone playing a game and just being like, "Are you winning, son?"
Yes.
You should do that. Do the opposite of that sometime while we're streaming. Just come in. Are you winning, Dad?
Yes.
Yes.
Alternatively, are you losing, Dad?
No.
We have viewers on the RP Gamer channel, man.
That's why you ask if he's winning.
PJ, Twitch, go to RP Gamer on Twitch. I'm also streaming there.
Compelling podcast.
This is high quality content right here.
No, this is just entertainment, dude.
Yeah. We do try to entertain, don't we?
Yes.
We have fun here.
Yes. If we didn't, we would have been ended this like 400 episodes ago.
I was horrified looking through the episode list a few days ago yesterday and being like, oh yeah, we started in 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
Nightmares.
Pre-Switch.
Yeah. 3DS in the full bloom of its youth.
Okay, actual questions. Fireminer.
Yeah, let's do some questions.
Says, do you think the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth combat system is able to satisfy people who want a more kinetic experience than the classic active time battle, but think 12 combat was too hands off and 13's too fast?
Worked for me.
I mean, my opinion is it should satisfy everyone and should have been the combat system in the main series instead of whatever they cobbled together for 16. So I guess my answer is yes.
I mean, it worked for me as someone who indeed, like, who enjoys the old combat system, but who definitely does find 12s too handy.
I mean, I think just someone who's maybe not even familiar with Final Fantasy just playing a game like that, just if you think of it in the terms of, like, a RPG based off of, like, an anime series, I think someone would want to be able to play as all the characters. And I think Final Fantasy VII Rebirth does that in spades. Like, just look at, in comparison, I know this is a turn-based game, but just look at, like, One Piece Odyssey, where you can use all the characters, and I think it's, like, a similar thing here. Like, people want to build apart, make a three-person party of their favorite characters most of the time, and be able to play as all of them. I think that's, to me, that's a core element that earlier action-based Final Fantasy games missed. Like, the feeling of having a party and being able to control that whole party. Like, as much as I love Final Fantasy XV, I think that's one of that game's biggest faults. And it is, to me, one of many, many, many faults of 16.
Yeah. Yeah, because 16, it's, you just play as the one character the whole time, and yeah. No, I was just thinking about this the other day, as a matter of fact, because, you know, 12 kind of plays more like an MMO, doesn't it? Like, you just kind of, you know, set him up and he just keeps auto-attacking.
That was definitely part of the design style, because that's, yeah, part of, I mean, that was what was big at the time.
But then I think 13 is most responsible for the modern combat system they implemented in, like, Crisis Core and again in Remake and Revelation. Yeah. I don't know. I really liked the combat in 13. That's all he could say.
I think 13 is very interesting because it's walking a fine line between action and turn-based. It's just like fast-paced turn-based, I guess.
Yeah.
And if you think that game plays itself and you have finished that game, go back to your save file from the end of the game and try to do anything and you will fail horribly. I know, because I've done that recently.
I just remember noting when I was originally writing on it, however many years ago this was now, that somehow they had made the L1 button the most important part of the entire battle experience.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And so that for the early game, yeah, you don't have to know what you're doing, but, like, yeah, no, exactly. I dare you to try to play the post game of 13, and you actually have to understand how the paradigms work and all the different roles, and then you got to be able to switch on the fly. So try to take out the adamantitoys or the long gui for, you know, farming the ingots. It's like, and you'll see, like, you gotta know exactly.
Would I ever do that?
When to switch? I had fun doing that, and actually, there is a horrible, horrible post game quest where you have to fight a fucking Tonberry. Ugh.
I remember the Tonberry.
I remember enjoying 13, but, like, can't imagine being enamored enough of the combat to want to, like, grind out a meta toys.
I know,
just the Tonberry, because you're not expecting it there. It's, you're on a hunt for something completely different, and this weird-looking monster spawns before you, and it's threatening, and it's menacing, and then this little derp in a brown cloak and brown coat just stumbles up to it and dinks it with the knife, and suddenly you're fighting that instead.
Yeah.
Appreciate when 7 Rebirth gave us the Tonberry King again.
Yes.
Oh, and then 14 had a whole Tonberry dungeon.
Yeah, but that's 14.
I might have told you this before, but when they announced Evercold, I thought it said Evergold, and I was picturing this kind of autumn-themed thing with golden leaves, you know, like the Altus Plateau and Elden Ring, and I'm like, oh, that'll be fun. Maybe it'll have Halloween stuff, and no, that's not what it is.
Nope. That would be cool, though. What else does he have to say here? It's curious when you talk to people about Final Fantasy Revelation, hearing them using Ubisoft as an adjective to describe the type of open-world game with bloated yet directionless open-world design. I recently played Assassin's Creed Black Flag, resynced a bit. It has a degree of freedom. You can pick whatever objective you like, pick the solution you want, and complete it within a reasonable time frame. Key here is to have the ship sailing and fighting mechanic that make the boring stretch of the game be fun. Is there a question in here?
I think it's more like food for discussion.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I know what he's saying about Revelation, but I think it's kind of mean to call it Ubisoft.
Well, I don't even think, like, I know people using that meme because they have a formula that they use, but if you pick up any of those games at random, they are very good because they just have developers that know how to make a game like that. And yeah, I understand that they're all samey to some extent, but to an extreme extent.
Yeah. Well, I just made it to the Village of the Gee, so.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I get that whole point, but like, which one of these many Ubisoft open world games is a piece of shit? I guess would be my point. And the answer is kind of none.
Whichever one the person doesn't like.
Yeah. The one that someone didn't like, or the one where you finally got bored of the idea, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the only reason you would be using it as an adjective in the first place, is yeah. There's one that you just didn't like.
Yeah, come to think of it, no, I mean, I like Star Wars Outlaws, but I mean, that this might be the point where I'm kind of burned out with Ubisoft design. I like the Far Cry games, but yeah, 6 did kind of get stale at a certain point.
I mean, sure. I guess I'm not in the same boat because the way I play those games is pretty differently. Like, I'm usually just going from story mission to story mission and maybe exploring and do an occasional side thing on the way, but I'm mainly, like, sticking to the critical path. Especially in the more RPG ones where wandering too much can wander you into a higher level area and get you killed.
Yeah, so I guess Rebirth is good in the sense that even if you do get locked into a specific area for a few hours, you know, or let's say you don't feel like doing the main story or you don't really quite know how to get to it, at least the enemies are like the same level as you, and then you can do those the summon battles, which are a pain in the ass, but they're worth it, you know. So I got Alexander and the other guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the most part, this being a direct follow-up, it's going to have a lot of the same open-world activities, so if you already liked it in Rebirth, it's probably not going to be an issue for you at all in Revelation. So I don't know if like people making that complaint didn't like those aspects of Rebirth, or are people that didn't even play Rebirth.
Also likely.
And I've said multiple times I preferred Remake, but I respect that Remake and Rebirth are two distinctly different games, and they're trying different things, and I appreciate any kind of experimentation, of course.
Well, I don't even think they're that different. Yeah. I think Remake is specifically remaking a section of the original game that was very linear and very focused, whereas you get to the rest of that game and there's a lot more meat on the bone already. Not getting into the many like different side activities they came up with for Rebirth. Like the card game that I want is a separate game.
Yeah. I don't care about Queen's Blood.
It's fine, and that's kind of the great thing about that game. You don't have to care about Queen's Blood.
No, you don't. Because there's a part where they want you to play in a tournament, and I was so mad, and then I found out
in the world.
You can opt out, and I was like, oh, thank God.
What, you don't want to play Queen's Blood against a terrible robot?
Yeah.
No.
But, I mean, I think that's another point, too, when people talk about, like, the Ubisoftification of these things, is that many of the...
You cannot participate in something if it's boring you.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of people just see these checkpoints on the map and feel obliged to do them all, or just that's how their brain works, and in which case maybe these games just aren't for you.
Mm-hmm. I do think that, like, well, it's a designer's like job to try to design a game in such a way that you'll play it that's fun. There is a point where you do have to take responsibility for the fact that you're playing a game in a way that isn't fun.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna just like complain that like, oh, there's like all this stuff that I don't want to do, and the game is not actually making you do it,
right?
You are the problem.
That's what I say every time I see someone trying to play like Persona 5 in such a way that you can max out everything. It's like
you're choosing your ordeal.
Yes.
Yeah.
They did not design this game this way. No one is making you play it like this except you.
Yeah, and like in your new game plus in the Persona games, that's when you have higher stats and you can pick dialogue options that previously were locked out early in the game, you know. It's like they're
just
meant
know
to
what's
played.
Coming so that
I
you
think
can
they're meant to be played twice. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think that's the idea for people that want to see everything in the game is New Game Plus, but some people just
I don't get it. Yeah, I can't imagine playing Persona
on the social links on my first run of Persona 5.
Yeah. You did?
Well, but
yeah.
But like what I want to say is I can't imagine playing Persona 3, 4 or 5 and just using a guide for the whole thing and picking the exact right choices. You know,
at least not on the first playthrough.
No, right. So
on subsequent playthroughs, go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a balancing act between social stats and social links and, oh, wait, I need money to buy better stuff. I need to go work a job this one day. And yeah, so it's a lot of time management. But I mean, to me, the game's much more enjoyable when you just go with the flow and just pick whatever feels right in the moment.
Do what brings you joy.
Yeah. Very happy about this Persona 4 revival. Which turns out it's going to Game Pass on day one, and it is a Play Anywhere title, if anyone cares about that. But
yeah, but I'm not grabbing a Game Pass for that shit.
Yeah, no, I will be getting a disc.
Yeah,
for my X-Bone. Well, not X-Bone, next series.
You'll get a disc.
We'll get a disc. It may also come with a statue. Will not admit to buying such a thing.
Yeah, but I saw it, but it's $250.
But it's Persona 4.
I didn't say Wheels was smart about her.
I don't buy any of those crazy editions anymore. They're too expensive.
What isn't, Joe? What isn't?
I know, it's like I'm being priced out of my hobby. It sucks.
Oh, because we are. Man.
Yeah.
That's why instead you should buy Dread Delusion for Switch 2.
I don't know, man. This just looks like
an actual cart.
This just looks like Hexen.
Yes. What? Why are you saying that like it's a negative?
I don't know. Maybe it's not a negative.
Kingsfield. It's like Kingsfield meets Morrowind.
I think I still have my Mac version of Hexen 2. I will drive over to your house and force this into your computer and then make you download Mac OS emulator to play it. If you ever
we're
use
too tired to keep...
as a negative again. God damn it.
We are too tired to keep going, and I'm going to end this discussion on the fact that it's still very funny that that series goes Heretic, Hexen, and 2, Heretic 2.
And Heretic 2 is unrelated to the other.
Yeah, but for some reason it's just...
And it's also in third person.
It's a baffling video game.
You know what the funny, not to drag this on too long, the funny thing is I was looking up that series a few weeks ago because I recently got the Switch cart that has Heretic and Hexen on it. And I was having trouble finding Heretic 2, like any information on it. It's like, am I like hallucinating this game? and finally I did, but there is less information about that game out there than the other three, which is
no one cares about
that game. It sucks. But yeah,
did you know that there was a Wheel of Time game in that style?
Yeah,
it's not very good.
Yeah,
no, yeah, I played it once and I'm like, oh, this is stupid. No connection to the books at all, really.
Let's put a fork in this. Let's just finish this. We're off to
here. Do you want to do this last Fireminer question, or should I just
paste
these all into the show notes?
Do the last one.
Okay. I previously complained about the fact that so many Japanese games took place in Tokyo, Kyoto, Okinawa, and nowhere else. But of those games, is there any that shows the bad side of these cities, like how Kyoto and other tourist places are being overrun by badly behaved tourists? When will I be able to experience the heaps of trashes left after Halloween night in Tokyo?
That sounds like I mean, like, if you look at like some of the Yakuza games, which are in like fictionalized Tokyo district, like those are pretty grungy and oftentimes trash covered.
I was going to say Yakuza is probably your best bet for quite a few cities in Japan, especially like the fourth one, fourth game, I think.
Four and five. Five has Fukuoka.
Yeah, I remember playing the demo for that one and finding where my favorite bar in Fukuoka should be, except it was just a staircase down where I found it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I still found the exact building.
It's like the game gesturing and saying there would be a bar here.
That, and I can tell you that the demo area ended just short of where the Mr. Donuts would have been.
Oh, I could go for a big donut.
What city did Yakuza Like a Dragon take place in?
That is... Oh, God, why am I...
And most of them took place in, like...
North.
A version of Kabukicho.
Yeah, no, 7 specifically takes place in a city that is far removed from Kamurocho, I think. Yokohama, you're in Yokohama.
Right, so that game doesn't have badly behaved tourists, but you just have these gangs of roaming hooligans,
it sure is. Like that's a game that's more focused on like undocumented immigration and homelessness.
Yeah.
So tourism might like theoretically show up as like a problem in a later Yakuza game, but I think that there would be. I think one of the reasons that you don't end up seeing this, aside from it being kind of a hard problem to depict, is just that, like, it also, if you're intending it for export, it, to the people, you know, like, if you're exporting it, you may have concerns about, like, does this look like we just don't like foreigners? And, like, that's not what they're doing. But there is, like, the risk that that's how it gets interpreted.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's close this out. Where can I find fine bookables?
Oh. Ooh. Well, assuming you are looking for fine literature to read over the summer. Okay, well, I do have other things to recommend besides that, then. So at the end of this month, I will be doing a summer sale for Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited to welcome episodes 14 and 15 as the conclusion to the primary story arc after a decade or so of writing it. It's been the official length of the series does in fact manage to surpass War and Peace by this point.
Nice.
Yes, as joked about in episode 11, it's like, yes, we actually managed to surpass War and Peace in less than 50 easy installments, 21 total. Most of them are novella or short story length, or most of them are novella or novelette length, except for the one summer camp novel, which I couldn't reasonably subdivide into separate ebooks. So, it's all... I mean, if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can just read it all for free. If you don't, then it's really easy to just pick up books one at a time as you can afford it. It's just a lot to read, a lot of fun. If you enjoy tabletop role-playing games, if you enjoy just lots of character interaction, it's just, it was a lot of fun to write, a lot of fun to read. kind of regretting some of the choices of equipment that required frequent dice rolls to determine where the story was going next. That got interesting at times. But, yeah, it's all good. So yes, it's Princesses of the Pizza Parlor for Kindle and Kindle Unlimited under the pen name Michael Yarimizu. Maikelyarimizu, along with a collection of Japanese animal folktales under Tanuki is a Teapot, and one lit RPG, Vainglorious Long is the Night. It's all that under that particular pen name. And then under the other pen name, which exists mainly because I do not wish to have crossover audience with between the middle grade fantasy, the middle school fantasy, and the first book I published under this pen name. So under the pen name Michael Spearwater, Spearwater, we have, first of all, A Wager for Wanderlust, which is a travelogue, romanticy, basically me experimenting with some topics, storytelling techniques, and what's right here? Interesting abuse of the English language. Suffice to say, there's no way an LLM could be coming up with anything in this book because they wouldn't be choosing some of the words I have been choosing. So it's interesting. Give it a look, or don't. I do not have any expectations that this one will ever sell. But the other two under this pen name, I'm hoping I've got more hopes for. First one there is The Sin of Tantalus, which is a near-slash-realistic future dystopia kind of thing. It's basically me taking all the zombie tropes that I can appreciate from all the movies I can't actually watch because I really hate Contagion horror, and making something a little different out of it. And then otherwise we have Monsters Among Us Teenage Wasteland, which is more based on my love for old creature feature style horror movies. And also a desire to just give the middle finger to a particular publisher who just kind of tried to screw me over on this one. So screw them. Okay. So anyway, so yeah, so that's... Oh, dang it. How many books at this point? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... Okay, so... Including the future paperback version, collection for the last section of the Princess story, that's 11 paperback books worth of stuff. Working on more, always working on more. I also have, again, under Michael Yarimizu, I have A Story on Royal Road, Muramanoa. It's epic mermaid fantasy. I've just included updates through the third book on that one, and I'm still typing up the fourth book on it. So, but if you look me up on Royal Road, it's on there as well. Okay. Okay. Out of stuff to talk about for now, tune in next year and I'll have even more. Okay.
Sure, where can we find you?
All right, so I'm still doing streaming for RP Gamer. So twitch.tv/RP Gamer Tuesday and Thursday nights starting around 10 p.m. So the good news is that on Thursday night, on my last segment of JRPG July, I was able to finish Kingdom Hearts.
Yay!
So it was the final mix, and man, that final boss and all those phases, and it's like, oh god, it was so hard. But I beat him. So the plan going forward is to just go right into Kingdom Hearts 2. So you can check out those streams Tuesday, Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern time. So this will also be the final mix as part of the 1.5 plus 2.5 remix on PS4. And then I have a YouTube channel under Smokin' Joe Gamer. And I did do a video of Splatoon Raiders. So I was testing out my new capture card to really see what it could do, and got some really good footage of just like the first 20 minutes of Splatoon Raiders, so you can watch that. There's no commentary or camera, but you know, if you want to just get a better idea of how the game plays, what it's like, and you know, if you're on the fence about it, then you know, you can check that out if you want. So yeah, I'm looking to do more YouTube content, you know, with the new capture card and the new headset, and looking to record some more music tracks that I might share at some point. So I do have, you know, a new MIDI controller that I use with GarageBand and other things, and I fixed my synthesizer and I've been practicing guitar. So maybe I'll have some musical content. So you can also follow me on Blue Sky under Smoke and Joe Gamer. And that's where you might see me post various things related to video games and music and anything else that interests me, anything else that pisses me off, and all that. So yeah, consider liking, subscribing, following, whatever the case may be. And then last night on Shenanigans, we were doing some co-op Splatoon Raiders, and then we were doing Sonic Racing Cross Worlds because of the new Ninja Turtles DLC. So you can check out Shenanigans on Sunday nights, usually starting around 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. Eastern Time, and we just play various games, and sometimes it's just me and Wheels, sometimes other people join in. We did Street Fighter last week. But I really think I need a break from Marvel Rivals and Overwatch, because those games have just been really raising my blood pressure. So that's all I got.
But new seasons.
No, no more seasons. Let's see. My brain died there for a second. Did Joe already advertise where we can ask questions?
No, that's your job. No.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so you can catch us when we stream, usually somewhere between 8:30 and 9 p.m. Pacific on Mondays. You can also ask us questions here if you catch us on twitch.tv/rbgamer or twitch.tv/askwin. You can also ask us about... Excuse me. You can also ask us questions in the podcast section of Discord, which you can join by going to rpgamer.com, clicking the community tab, or ask us in the god fucking damn it, the comment section, which I just realized we got a question that we did not answer for. We'll get back to it.
We'll get to it. Shaman, I'm so sorry.
Feel like an asshole.
We had it in the show notes and we forgot.
And I posted it.
We ignored our own goddamn show notes. Okay, well, yeah, that'll be top priority next. But yeah, ultimately, also, yeah, those are the primary way you can ask this question. Thank you to Fireminer and Shaman. And I think that about wraps it up for us.
No, not yet. Go buy physical games, people, especially physical indie games. Okay, continue.
Of course.
And physical books, go ahead.
Yes,
go ahead.
Too.
Yes, especially physical indie books. Yeah. Otherwise, Space Cowboy.
See ya.
See ya. The best of all.